The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and you know how we do on Fridays. Kicking it off with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan's Joke of the Week.
Chris Jericho, Jesus walked into the inn, sets down three nails, and says, "This is going to be enough to put me up for the night." Thank you very much.
That's great. Oh, that's great. I love that one. Thanks to Duff McKagan for another classic rotten joke. Hopefully he can call in some more because he is doing a great job. And every single Friday when he gives us jokes, we will play them for you right here on Talk is Jericho. Only place you're going to hear the Duff McKagan joke of the week, and the only place you're going to hear the debut of Taz, one of my old friends here making his debut on Talk is Jericho. We worked together in ECW and then again in WWE. And now Taz does his own live radio show, video show, podcast called The Taz Show. You can check it out daily on Facebook at The Taz Show. He's also going to tell us more about what he's got coming up, along with stories about his wrestling career, what inspired the Taz gimmick, his first match in WWE, how he broke the news to Paul Heyman that he was leaving ECW and Paul's response, how he became a color commentator at WWE and the trials and tribulations of all of that. Taz makes his big debut coming up here on Talk is Jericho. He obviously knows how to do a radio show. He's very entertaining, very, very good guest, and we're really excited for you to hear it all. Also excited for you to check out the Judas Rising 2018 Tour Fozzy kicking it off next week in New Orleans at the House of Blues. February 28th is the first date. We've got Through Fire, Santa Cruz, Dark Sky Choir joining us. First round of dates looks like this. Okay, like I said, February 28th in New Orleans at the House of Blues. March 1st in Houston at the Scout Bar. March 2nd, Dallas at Canton Hall. That's on a Saturday. That's on a Friday. Lubbock on March 3rd at Jake's. March 4th, El Paso at Speaking Rock Casino. That's a free show. So if you live in El Paso and you want to come check out Fozzy, come see us at the Speaking Rock. We were there a few months ago when we did Fozzy Across America. It is a great venue, a great place. Kevin Vargas taking care of us there in El Paso. Free show in El Paso on Sunday, March 4th. Then March 7th, we're in Tucson at Club X. March 8th in Phoenix at the Marquee Theater. Come check those shows out. March 9th, San Diego, House of Blues. We're playing there with Iced Earth. Only show the tour where we're with Iced Earth. March 10th, Los Angeles at the Whiskey. March 11th in Las Vegas at Counts Vamped. March 13th, San Francisco at Slim's. March 15th, Portland, Oregon at Dante's. March 16th, Seattle, Washington at Studio 7. Oh, second leg of the tour already booked with Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, Grand Rapids, Dayton, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Clifton Park, New York City, Philadelphia, Portland, Maine, Hampton Beach. If you want tickets and information at any of those shows, go to FozzyRock.com now and pick up all the info, pick up some tickets. Get Fozzy VIP, one of the best VIP meet and greets you're going to find in the entire music business. We'll give you a mini concert just for you and the other VIPs. We'll meet you, we'll greet you, we'll even retweet you. We'll take pictures, we'll sign, we'll do whatever it is that you want to do. Go to FozzyRock.com to find out information about Fozzy's award-winning VIP program. A couple of the things, if you want to go see Fozzy at New York at the Gramercy Theater and Iced Earth at the Gramercy Theater, they're playing there March 22nd. If you buy a ticket for either show, you get to go to the other show for free. So you buy an Iced Earth ticket, you get to come to the Fozzy show. You buy a Fozzy ticket, you get to go to the Iced Earth show. Just go to FozzyRock.com for all information on how you can do that. And also April 8th, I know that's WrestleMania Day. I will not be at WrestleMania, but I will be performing at Wally's in Hampton Beach in New Hampshire. If you come to the Fozzy show, it's an early show. We'll be finished by 7. Then Fozzy, myself included, are going to stay at Wally's and watch WrestleMania with you. So buy a ticket for the Fozzy show and watch WrestleMania with Fozzy and Chris Jericho for free. So that's it for that. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information. And here we go. It's time for Taz to shoot straight right here on Talk is Jericho. So here's the thing. I am in this studio, Taz's studio, his radio show. And 500 episodes. That's really impressive, man. And it's funny to me because you've really parlayed almost what you were known most for. Like, you're a great wrestler, but almost known more as being a great commentator. And now this radio show after 500 episodes. How do you have the show go for so long? What's the secret?
Same thing you've done with your music career. Same thing you've done with your wrestling career. Everything, your acting. It's work ethic, right? It's how we're built. It's the fabric who we are. It's the grind. It's the competitiveness. It's to be a winner. Mm-hmm. You know, you were raised by a pro athlete, okay, and your dad. So you were raised to be a winner. You were raised to compete, right? Mm-hmm. I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't raised by a pro athlete, but it's drive. It's to be the best. It's to compete against yourself.
Right.
You know, and I think guys from our generation as wrestlers have that. Mm-hmm. You know, not all guys, but I think a lot of us. You know,
how do you like hosting a show?
I love it. I've had in the past 3 years and 500 episodes the most fun I've ever had. Sometimes I miss wrestling, not often, like being in a ring, but I know physically I couldn't because I was just banged up too much. I do miss color commentary sometimes, but nothing tops what I do now. Like being a broadcaster, having that creativity, you understand, you have that creative liberty, you have that, there's no governor on you, you just do your thing, man. And when you have creative juices, well, hopefully they taste good, and that's the deal, man, you know? So drink it in, man. Yeah, I just stole your gimmick.
How do you, like, run your show? Like, how do you decide what you're going to talk about?
Well, it's funny you said the word topic, because that's what the show is. It's not a traditional type of podcast covering wrestling. No knock on anyone, including yours. It's not a guest-driven. It's a topic-driven. So, which makes it, as you know, knowing podcasting so well, it makes it not as evergreen, which is a negative. But I'm lucky enough that the company I work for, they wanted a topic-driven live video show. And that's what I've been for, you know, 500 episodes. And it's a lot of it is about my experience as a worker and a commentator and a trainer and watching wrestling, not just WWE, other programming, Lucha Underground or Ring of Honor. You know, I don't watch much TNA, but, you know, and I'll watch it, and people want to hear my point of view on it. And that's kind of what I do. It's very topic driven, or it's not a news show. So, like, if, you know, hypothetically, Chris Jericho is working for WWE and he gets to a fight in a bar and breaks a guy's jaw and gets arrested, I'm not really going to talk about that. Like that. So it's topic driven, but not that. I'm not a news show. You know, yeah, I'll talk about news sometimes if it's newsworthy, heavy. You know, but I don't. Like, I don't get into people's business. I don't try to be controversial.
The controversy, yeah.
I don't. I swear to you, I don't. That's not my thing. I give my opinions. They're hard opinions on what I'm watching. And I try to be fair. I won't say, oh, what WWE did here sucked, period. No. What WWE here sucked, what I would have done is this.
Right.
That. So, yeah, maybe it's armchair quarterbacking, but at least I'm not just saying it sucked.
But you, once again, you're almost like a Don Cherry or John Madden, yeah, that you played the game.
Correct.
So, you know, your opinion, and you're allowed to have your opinion, has a little bit more validity to it. So does this entail you having to watch Raw and SmackDown every week?
Yes, bro.
That's part of your job,
yes,
now. How is it for you? Because, like, for me, it's because I'm still in the job.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch wrestling. I'd rather just read it online or read, you know, the Meltzer sheet or just find out kind of a little bit. Like, but to watch the shows, it's hard.
Bro, when I worked for WWE like you, when I was a wrestler, even into being a commentator, especially then, I didn't watch any of the shows. I didn't. And that's just the thing. When you're doing it for a living, you're there. You don't want the wrestling business in your home or your life or your mobile device when you're not around the locker room or the company. This is different. What I do is I have to. Like, that's what people expect. Now, that being said, there's a lot of what I do in my show that has nothing to do with wrestling. We have a lot of fun. It's a lot of jocularity. It's a lot of guy talk, sophomoric stuff, goofing off. It's a morning show feel. I talk a lot of sports, you know, a lot of, you know, football and college football and baseball, just, but obviously my expertise is wrestling, but I'll give opinions on wrestling and what I see and I do. To answer your question, yeah, I have to watch Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and if I only watch a quarter of it or a half of it, I'll say that. I'll say, listen, I didn't watch the whole show, but what I did see, I will not comment on something I didn't see. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of my producers saw it. I'll get their fan perspective, and I'll react to what I feel they saw. You know what I mean?
So when you were doing color commentary, you were really good at it. You and Cole were good.
Thank you, man. That means a lot.
And what do you think, like, what does it take to be a good commentator? When you watch it now, there's some, Cole's still on there. I mean, there's some good, some bad. But in your opinion, what is the secret?
I think the first thing is, if you're a color commentator, not play-by-play, so if you're a former wrestler, you have to, and I learned this from Vince McMahon directly to me in a private conversation, you have to be able to take your ego and what you did and take, it's not about you. Hmm. It's about the talent. And you have to, you can't have an ego. It's a humbling job. Right. I got to put everybody, you know how the boys are. I don't want to put nobody over. I put over more guys as a commentator than I did as a worker. You know, I didn't put anybody over.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So anyway, but the thing is, you got to take your ego, and Vince taught me that right away. He said, you put your ego behind a curtain. And the first guy I did that with as a commentator was Kurt Angle. Kurt hit a suplex, and I respect and love Kurt and all. And I put over his suplex so high, and like, I know Kevin Dunn and Vince thought it was the greatest thing ever that I put over a suplex, you know. And I meant it. His suplex was really good. Now, I humbly say I thought mine was better, but I didn't say that on the air. Well, no, I'm joking. But yeah, you got to be able to, I think the key is, bro, is you got to be able to put your ego and your agenda and table it. And it's got to stay in the gorilla position. You just can't bring it out to the ring and out to the announce desk. That's number one. I'm a guy who believes in a former world champion as a color commentator. Now, that's not a knock on any current color commentators, but I believe in the guys who've been to the dance, who've drawn some money, and who know what it takes to have a title. Because, as you know, because you've done it so many times, when you're a world champion, you know, yeah, it's a work, we understand that, but...
But it's really not, though.
Right, right, you know? Because you are the front man. Yeah. You're the guy, you know? So that's a very big responsibility, as you know. And it's a big deal. So I believe that how is it, and I know it's going to sound negative on current color commentators that maybe weren't world champs.
Well, there's nobody that's on the commentating staff that worked, is there? Except for Corey.
Corey, right. I think he was a tag champ in NXT, and he does a good job. And Byron is, I don't know if he
barely worked.
The other kid on NXT, I don't remember his name.
Oh, Nigel
McGuinness.
Well,
not Nigel. I know he worked. Yeah, he was a good worker.
But on Raw and SmackDown, no, it was really not. It's interesting. That's a good point.
So that, to me, that jumps out to me. Mm-hmm. I believe in that. I believe in guys that you can't tell me as a fan if I've never been a wrestler. You can't tell me what it's like to be in the pit and be in the grind as a world champ if you haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to those guys. I hope the best for those guys. And I met Corey. He seems like a really good guy, you know, and he's good at what he does.
But it's a great point, though.
Just my point, my opinion. You know, I believe in that. So I think that's another ingredient you need to have, is to have some legitimate sea legs under you as a professional wrestler. I really believe in that. I think those are some, putting your ego, checking it, and having the chops, also the talk, obviously. You know, for me, it was, I didn't want to do it. You know,
really? How did that start then?
Well, because I was in an angle with I did the thing at the Garden with JR where I cut a promo on him, and then Jerry Lawler got up and popped me, and then we got into a little angle, Jerry and I, I'm trying to remember. And then we did a thing where, like, on a SmackDown somewhere, I think I attacked him before the show, and then sat in and did color. So I was supposed to sit in for, like, one match, and then Lawler was going to come and attack me from the front row from behind and then take his seat back. I was going to sit with Michael Cole for, like, the opening segment of a SmackDown. I think it might have been in Louisville. I don't know why that sticks out to me. So we do the segment, me and Michael Cole, and I'm like, oh, all right. I was a little nervous, but I could talk, and I could just basically, you know, see what's going on in the ring. And I'm waiting for someone to tell me that Jerry's coming, but Jerry didn't come. Like, no one attacked me. I'm like, all right, well, that didn't work. I know you know, this yeah, something like that. Like, what's going on? Like, we kind of worked this out. All right, next segment, no one's talking to me. Hmm. And there's no talk back. Like, I can't talk back. I can hear. See, TNA was different. TNA was a two-way street at the announcement.
Oh, you could say, hey, what's going on or something like that, right?
WWE, not so much. So, one-way Jones, bro. So, you could hear it, yeah. You can't say it.
Vince doesn't want to hear what you have to say.
And they can see you. Yeah. That's the fun part. Yeah. So, anyway. So, no law. No, he's not attacked. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Next, the music starts for whoever it was. I think Chuck Palumbo or somebody. All right. So, I look at Cole, and he just writes me, no, keep going. Hmm. All right. So, we just not calling that match. Then there was another match. And so I'm like, what? I didn't know what was going on. It was basically a live on-air audition, I guess. And next I know, Lawler came at the room and just drills me. Like, I didn't know he was... I forgot about Lawler, which wasn't fun. I'm like, oh, man. I thought it was like a mark who just sucked at me. And I realized we were doing a... And I went backstage, and I went to Gorilla, and Vince called me over. He said, hey, he goes, you're very good at this. You have a lot of potential in this. I didn't know what he was talking about. Because I wasn't going out there like to audition, and I'm like, "Oh, thanks." You know, you don't get, you know, you get a compliment from Vince, you just take it and say thank you, and just mm-hmm. I want to just
walk away.
They
don't come easy.
They don't come easy. Yeah. He said, "No, listen, Taz, you're very good at this." Okay, and then that was, and then like we came home from the road, and I got a call from Kevin Dunn, and said, "Hey, Jerry Lawler can't make it to a UK tour. We're doing a UK pay per view. I knew about the pay per view. I was supposed to be at a house show working somewhere." And he said, we're going to take off the house show. We need you to go call a three-hour pay-per-view in the UK with JR. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. I go, Kevin, I don't know. He goes, don't worry. JR will get you through it. Dude, I was like pooping my pants. And JR got me through it. And then the rest is history. It just kind of clicked. And I didn't want to do it, but it was hard. It was very hard. And I'm a competitive guy, as I said. So it was a challenge. And then, you know, Vince said, listen, you know, I tore my bicep. I was injured and all this. So it's like, listen, you got a messed up neck. You know, you have a lot of physical issues. You know, this could be a great career for you. You have a young child at home. My wife wanted me to embrace this. I really didn't want to. I wanted the boys. I wanted to go to work. Yeah. And I did it. And I'd have no regrets. I wouldn't have the career I have now. And when I got the contract with CBS to do my live daily show, Vince McMahon is the first guy I emailed. I didn't text him. I emailed him. And I thanked him. And I told him what I had. And he replied to me right away, and he was so happy for me. And I said, I have to thank you. You and Kevin, you guys put me in this position. And Michael Cole and JR helped me. And, you know, I wouldn't have this.
It's interesting because that's something that Vince is very good at. I can almost guarantee that was not a coincidence. And obviously the Lawler thing was probably, no, tell Lawler to wait for a bit. I want to watch this. Because I bet you he was thinking... He might have heard you do some promo or something and went, listen, we know his career is not going to last much longer physically,
yeah.
But this guy can talk. Let me see what he can do.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah. You know, kayfabe, you don't know.
No, right? I can tell you right now.
And that's cool. Now as I'm older, I understand. They shouldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm. You might get in your own head and freak out and screw
up. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I remember those times, and it was crazy because I didn't want to do it, dude. But I have no regrets.
Is Vince in your earpiece the whole time when you're doing? Is he telling you? Because I know whenever I do guest commentary, you're like, Chris, say this or something like that. Is that an ongoing thing?
It depends.
Okay.
I used to love when Vince was in. I can't remember the angle he was doing with a lot of stuff. Like he was on TV a lot. Well, like with Trump and all this stuff, it was great because he wasn't a gorilla. So it was me and Cole could just work. Or JR would be there, and he was cool. He would produce us easy. Now, Vince at times would overproduce us. He wasn't constantly there. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the problem is Vince will be distracting the gorilla with something and then get on the air and say something to you. Meanwhile, I might have just said it.
Right, yeah.
Or contradicts what my partner says. That's why I hear, like, Booker T. He's the only guy, by the way, who's a world champion.
Right, good point.
Good commentary.
Yeah, good call.
And I'll listen to what Booker says. He's lived, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's credible. But the thing is, bro, it's like, for me, I think all announcers need to be produced. Overproducing can get a little bit. That's why Booker T, that's what I was going to say. Booker, sometimes you'll hear him say something, and like the Cole and what's his name, Corey, will rib him and joke with him on the air. But it's just it's not that Booker's a dumb guy. He's being. It can make you really.
Yeah.
It can screw you up. It was.
Is there ever a time when you didn't say something that Vince wanted you to, or he got mad at you for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was this time, too, where I would do this gimmick where he would say something, I just wouldn't say it. And he would get hot, and he would just keep screaming, and I would just no-sell. And then, during a break, Kevin would go, Taz, do we have Vince? I'm like, no, I haven't heard him at all. Come on, dude, that's a shoot. So I learned that without naming names from one of the commentators there who taught me that. And then Vince, I was like, Vince, I can hear you now. And then next thing, you know, there's like five audio guys mess with my, whoa, during the break, you know. You know, there's nothing wrong with the audio, bro. I just stooge myself off. But yeah. Yeah, sometimes you just get to a point if you do enough, after you do enough shows, you just don't, you just.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes Vince, you know, would give you some really good stuff because, you know, we are the last voice to sell tickets. You see, and I learned that right away. We are the last voice to the audience.
That's a great sentence.
Yeah, it's
true. We're the last voice to sell tickets.
Last voice to sell tickets, right? We're the last voice at that time to sell pay-per-views, you know? So you, so Vince knew that, and he would utilize the announce talent, and I would learn. I learned so much about the business by being an announcer there. I mean, just because I've had so many one-on-one, well, three people in the meeting, me, Cole, and Vince, meetings, pre-show meetings about, let's go this direction, let's go. No, not people. Some people think it's a script. It's not. You can't do that job in a script.
No.
It's impossible.
Right.
You know, and it's, the matches are so quick, especially TV matches, as you know. You have a short time to get over each talent and the story and get me to the next segment. It's not easy. It's a very hard job. It's an extremely hard job. You know, so Vince understood, and I learned rapidly that the announced talent is the last voice to get people to pay. So I think that it's a big pressure job. There were times that I didn't want to go on the air, or me and Cole would just sit in the parking lot and show prep. Didn't want to be around, like, you know, just it gets.
Why is that?
It's a good question.
Too much pressure or
sensory
overload?
It's not the pressure. It's the lack of freedom as a broadcaster.
Ah, gotcha.
And I can't speak for Cole, but it would piss me off a lot. And I'm not the only guy, as you know. It would piss you off. When you have something, you're a guy who has something to say, hence the success of this podcast. I'm a guy who has something to say. Steve Austin's a guy who has something to say. Jerry, you get my drift.
Yeah.
Right? So you have something to say. You're creative. You have an esophagus with voice muscles. You say it. And a mind. Well, I would feel like I'm just a puppet.
Yeah.
A highly paid puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point where when I left, like I had my, it was like probably my third contract coming at me, and I felt bad. I said, Kev, I'm not, Kevin Dunn is your direct boss.
Oh, you left on your own.
I did. Yeah. And I said, I think I need a little break. He goes, what? He goes, well, you want to, is it a money? I said, no, it's not the money. The money's fine. And he was so cool. He's like, well, think it over. I said, okay. And I took a week. It was right before WrestleMania in Orlando at the
Orange 2008.
Bowl. It was not Orlando. Was it 2008? Yes,
Citrus Bowl. Yeah.
Citrus Bowl. Thank you. I can remember. And I remember it was the week going into that, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to be in the company. I needed a break. They treated me great, dude. It wasn't that. They treated me great. I flew on Vince's plane home all the time because we had to get in for do voiceovers in Connecticut and stuff, and. I just needed a break, and Kevin was cool, and I talked to Vince, and we hugged, we had tears in our eyes. He's like, Dad, I don't want you to leave. I go, Vince, I don't want to leave, but I just need a break. He goes, I understand, you know, and so we left in good terms, and I remember saying to Kevin, I said, I will come in, not to leave you in a lurch, and I will call WrestleMania. He goes, well, no, your contract will be done. You're not signing, your deal's done. I go, Kevin, I don't need money. Just fly me in. I'll do it for free. You guys have been here just about a decade.
Yeah, right.
You don't need to pay me. I said, but if you want to go a different direction, he goes, yeah, let me talk to Vince. But I appreciate that. He goes, but I think we got to go whatever we're going with. Right. I understand that. And they did. They didn't use me.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For me, when I first came in the WWE, and the same with Austin, and the same with Hunter, and the same with Eddie, and everybody, when you first came in the WWE, was it a hard adjustment to make at first?
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't know how much for you. I mean, you just said it was
hard.
Bro, for me, I was a 5'8" killing machine in ECW where I was saying, beat me if you can, survive if I let you, and get in your face, and you know, that my gimmick was built on intimidation, you know. That's who the human suplex machine was. And when Vince and I negotiated everything, and I was under the impression I was going to be the same character, but they didn't see me like that. So that changed. And my style, I remember Vince saying to me once, well, you know, people, no, one of the agents, wasn't Vince, one of the high agents said, I don't know if it was Pat or it was Jerry Briscoe, whoever it was, said, it might have been Vince too, it looks like you're hurting guys with these suplexes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, isn't that my job? I mean, like, I'm supposed to be portraying that I'm injuring you. Yeah, but you're not a big guy. I go, okay, well, I'm not a little guy. I'm not a tall guy, but I'm 255 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm little. I'm just not tall. But if I'm, I mean, Mike Tyson kind of has this thing where he's 5'10 and he can just knock people's heads off their bodies, and mm-hmm. people believe it. So I didn't buck it that much. I just said my piece, and they're like, well, I think we need to kind of repack. I said, okay. And I had to change my in-ring style. Vince wanted me to be a baby face that was full of heart, fighting from underneath. I couldn't sell to save my ass.
Yeah, that's never your thing.
Yeah, I wanted to be a good seller, but I sucked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, you worked with me, you know. Unfortunately, I tried, though.
You know, it's interesting, though, man. It's funny because I remember Bret Hart told me this when I came in, and I got lambasted, and it's well documented. My first 3 months there were not good. And Bret said that Vince is like a drill sergeant that wants to break you down and build you up in his own image.
Mm.
And anything that anybody has ever done before they go through that curtain
means nothing.
Yeah. So when he sees Taz, he might never even have seen you in ECW.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're not a small guy. You're a cigarette machine with a head on it. But you
I
know,
like that.
It's not tall.
Yeah,
Vince's world of tall is, you know, and that's, I can see.
Especially during that time, Chris, you were there.
Absolutely.
6'6". You know?
I can see the difference in what's going on because you came in with one thing, and if they don't push you that way, then you're just a guy.
Oh.
Because I remember that night in the Garden when you came in, it was like a surprise against Angle.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. That was one of the best moments.
Yeah. Bro, it was the greatest moment in my professional career.
Yeah.
And I said it on my show many times. It was the greatest moment in my career and the worst. And I'll tell you why the worst. Because I knew when I walked out, I've been around like you were around. You know, you're smart to the business. And when I came out, when I was in the gorilla position, Bruce Pritchard was running gorilla. And right when Kurt was cutting his promo, and I said to Bruce, I go, wow, I hope they know who I am. I was just afraid because I was from the small little Bush Leagues in ECW and the bingo hall. And and on cue, my music hit. Not my music, the heartbeat. Ba-boom,
yeah,
ba-boom.
Bing, bing. Yeah.
And the place exploded. And Bruce goes, I think they know you, bro. Like that. And when I walked through the curtain, as I was walking slowly with towel on my head, it got louder and louder, the pop. And I had this epiphany. I'm doomed. Because this pop was not built by this place.
That's a smart...
Bro, it hit me walking down the aisle. I'm not a spiritual guy, but I don't know what words in the spiritual talk you put it in, but it was... It just hit me. I'm like, wow, this is... You know, I still was focused on the match. I got an Olympic gold medalist. I got to go work with, you know. You know, Kurt wasn't super polished then either, so it was a war. You know, and now
once
Kurt
again,
could be.
Kurt also not a big guy. I mean,
no,
well,
no,
muscled, but not
no,
tall.
Not
He's
tall.
Shorter than I am.
Yeah, Kurt are probably the same height.
Right.
And I, you know. And we worked physical, aggressive, and all that. And here's what happened. When I hooked him in the choke, he got choked out. I didn't notice till after when I heard the commentary back. JR and King was saying it's an illegal choke. It's an illegal choke. Like that was not part of the shtick, bro.
Mm.
I got kind of worked on that.
Oh, really? Like
I got swerved. Yeah.
In what way? That like you were under the assumption that's your finish.
Yeah. There was no words told to me by the writers or anybody that's going to be an illegal choke. We're going to do this thing. I knew Kurt was going to get stretchered, but I didn't know it was going to be called an illegal choke.
Mm.
Like that never came. That those words. Never came to my ears until I heard the commentary the next day in catering, watching the tape back, the VHS, as you know, we used to use the VHS. And here's another funny thing. When I came through the curtain right after that, dude, it was like a ghost town. Vince wasn't a gorilla. There was, and this is live Royal Rumble. In Madison.
Really?
Bro, it was like, I felt, and I'm like, I guess I got heat. It was.
Wow.
Yeah. Another thing that happened. See, when you brought up the Garden, and now, I've talked about this on this show, my show, a lot. what happened during the match, if you go back and watch it, it was a German suplex spot where I did a German to Kurt and flip him, and he lands on his belly. What happened was when I grabbed Kurt, he popped up, and I put him back down because I knew, and I've suplexed you many times, and I would always say to guys, let me control you. I'll protect you. Mm-hmm. And, you got it right away. Mm-hmm. And Kurt was just, we didn't know each other that well in the ring. And so Kurt, he's a working machine. He's aggressive. You know how he is. And I knew the timing was way off. Mm. And I knew if I went through with that throw, he was going to get hurt.
Right.
I knew it. Mm-hmm. I put him back down and then did the throw on my pacing, and he was fine. Mm-hmm. But what happened was that little hiccup, from what I feel and what I heard, freaked out the boss. And some of his people that are close to him.
Wow.
And
that's all it takes.
That's all it takes, brother.
And once again, not knowing you, quote unquote, and seeing maybe heard some things.
They know my rep. They always know it's my rep.
Yeah.
I remember when I first met with Vince, we had this great meeting in a conference room in a hotel on a Wednesday afternoon because we couldn't meet at the office.
Oh, wow. It was a secret.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I was top guy in ECW.
Right.
So it was a big kayfabe thing, and as things were back then. And, and it was fun, and we met. It was me, Vince, and actually Vince Russo was there. He was the head writer then, and it was just us three. And they had a catering spread there that it looked for like 50 people. It was like three guys,
right? That's Vince impressing.
Oh yeah, bro. And I was impressed. Yeah. He got me. He hooked me, and it worked. And dude, we talked about money and the deal. That took literally, no lie, 10 minutes, and then we talked for another hour and a half about nothing. Everything else.
Yeah, it's about life. Yeah.
The deal was done, and he knew me. He knew the character. He talked about, I used to have the FTW in my wrist. He's like, I don't know if we could do the FTW. I don't know. That was the only thing. And my concern was, am I going to be able to be me? Because I don't know how to do portray a lot of characters in this business. But this one I know. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say he lied to me. I just think that he had a different vision for me once I was there. It's like a coach on a team. I might think you're the greatest player in the world, but then I get fired. He comes in as the coach. He might think you stink, and he benches you.
Yeah. Well, I came in basically under, Vince obviously made the decision, but Russo was like the big champion for me. Then Russo left like a month later, and I was done. I was done.
Dude, that's what happened to me because Russo left. Same thing happened with me. He was in my corner.
He was a champion too, yeah.
And then he's gone, and I was doing a radio interview with Bill Apter. Bill?
Yeah.
And Bill said, I don't know if you just heard, but Vince Russo's leaving WWF. And this is right before I debuted. And I'm trying to, work, I heard that might happen. I had no idea. I got done with that interview, and I called Russo, and he didn't pick the phone. I'm like, dude, I really need to talk to you. I was concerned. I was so concerned, Chris. I went to the Nassau Coliseum 2 weeks later. WWE Raw was doing a show there, and Vince, I contacted Beth, his assistant then. Oh, she's not.
Vince's assistant?
Is she still there?
I don't think she is. Yeah.
But anyway, and she was real cool. And she's, go. I'll tell Vince you're going to be at the Coliseum. So I go, and I went in his mock office. And he's like, hey, pal, what's going on? You're going to debut soon and all this. He was all excited. I'm like, yeah, it's great. I met with him and Shane. And I said, this is my concern. I said, my concern is that, I'm, this other guy left, and he's the guy bringing me in. He goes, whoa. where I'm going. I brought you in.
Yeah.
He didn't bring you in. And I'm like, that's all I need to hear, Vince. That's all I need to hear. I live 15 minutes from this building. 15 minutes to hear that, I'm good. Have a great show. He left. That was it. So, but it didn't really, early on for my wrestling career, pan out. A lot of people say, oh, man, they dropped the ball on you as a wrestler. Oh, man, you failed as a wrestler there. You know what? I got to tell you, I am so thankful to WWE. I would not have had a second career as a broadcaster there without them giving me the opportunity. I don't need to kiss their ass. I never have. I'm very critical of them at times on my show, but I also put them over a lot too. I'm very genuine on my show, how I feel. And I'm not a hater. I'm not bitter. I'm very happy where I am in my life. I couldn't.
It's like you said, happy. That's all part of the evolution of Taz going from, like you said, FTW, never talk, and look at you now.
Can't shut up, I know.
Was it hard to leave ECW at the time? Was that 99, 2000?
99.
Is that when you came in?
I debuted in, right after you, I debuted. You debuted for WWE.
Yeah.
It had to be late 99, Christmas.
Very close, yeah.
I debuted at the Royal Rumble in 2000.
Okay.
So it was right after you.
Right.
I remember seeing your debut, and I'm like, I remember talking to Kevin Dunn and Jim Johnson. I said, no, because they talked about my video wall before I debuted, and Adam Pannucci, you know Adam, and he's the band, and music. And I'm like, and we sat in this conference room in staff. I said, he goes, what are you thinking? And I said, whatever you guys did for Jericho, times 10. And they all popped. They all left. I said, that was awesome, you know? And yeah. They were like, yeah, no, because I loved it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was joking about the times 10. But,
no,
you know,
but still, I mean, it's funny, too, because we think about that intro, but it wasn't too long after that I'm losing to D'Lo Brown on Sunday Night Heat.
I forgot, because I was so worried about my own thing, you know, when you're there.
Right up there, and then went straight down the rabbit hole. And that's how they do it.
You lived that, too.
I completely did it. I was able to get out of it. But it took a long time. It really, really did. It was not easy.
Bro, you know how it is. You're so focused on your own thing when you're there. Even though we're sharing a locker room, you don't really pay attention to what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't anyway. Yeah, I just didn't. I was so... I'm working with the big boss man and Albert and trying to, you know, 2-on-1. And these guys are 9 feet tall and potatoing me in love. Yeah. And because Vince wants to, you know, bring out that anger in Taz and his comeback. Okay, well, I don't need to get, you know... these giant men stomping on me to get me angry. I mean, you know, working with Dave Heath, Gangrel, who I love, and hitting him so hard and busting his eardrum with an open hand slap because they wanted me just to be super physical.
But that's what happened.
I felt so horrible.
You start losing your confidence, though. You don't know what they want.
I know.
And that's a bad place to be.
They don't know what they want.
Yeah.
It is a bad place. And that's where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you were a little bit, too. I didn't know that.
Completely. My first... I started the door opening up when I worked with Triple H for the title, I think in April. They had me win the title for like 20 minutes. It was a surprise thing. I came in August, so that's 8 months.
I remember calling. That wasn't when you won the... What was it when you won the big flair belt, the world... That was after, right?
Officially, it was the Undisputed Championship, but it beat Rock and Austin. Yeah.
I called that match.
Yeah, exactly. So what we were asking, was it hard for you to leave ECW?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Brutal, dude.
Yeah.
It was horrible, man. It sucked. I cried like a friggin' baby. Oh, my God. Jesus. It was horrible.
But what was the reason then?
Paul thought that we had a deal. We verbally agreed. It wasn't a leverage thing. I didn't even know about WWE coming to the table. We agreed on a deal, and then I was thinking, I don't know if Paul can actually financially afford what he's telling me he's going to pay me. Because I was pretty hot at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, the character was really...
And also, one of the cornerstones, I think of the Dudleys, I think of Tommy, I think of you and Sabu. Those are the four Mount Rushmore ECW guys.
Yeah, I think you got full, like, Raven or Shane in there, too.
And RVD.
RVD, absolutely.
But I get your drift. Cornerstones.
And thank you. But the thing is, man, like, you know, I wanted to work the big buildings. I wanted to be in what I felt was the major leagues at that time. I always want the next best thing for me. Even though we verbally agreed, we never really had paper. We always shook hands, you know, old school, right? And when I got the call from them to have a meeting, you know, I just couldn't pass it up. And and the money was amazing. And it's the most money I've ever was going to make in my life at that time. And my wife and I just had a baby, you know, so... I just felt like I had to. And then the toughest thing was I sat there with Vince in that conference room in that hotel in Stanford. And I said, you know, I got to work dates. I got to finish out the right way and put guys over. And Vince like, yo, God, of course. He goes, do business the right way. Yeah. I believed in that. You know, I really believe. And I still believe
in that.
So
does Vince.
I know. And I still believe in that. And Vince was like, he's like, I'm so glad that you're going to be part of this company because you get it. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys don't get it. No, I get that, Vince. And brother, Paul had me do a lot of jobs on the way out.
Was he kind of pissed at you for
very pissed.
We had a deal sort of thing?
Could you do? Like, he was very, very pissed. Mm-hmm. He was very, very pissed.
Sure, that was a hard conversation to have.
Very hard. That my phone, and that then, cell phones were newer then, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one because I was cool. and didn't remember if cell phones didn't the guy's name wouldn't come up, his number would come up.
Yeah.
And I knew his number by heart. It's my boss. And while I'm in that meeting, it kept ringing.
Oh, when you were with Vince? Yeah. Oh, wow.
I think he knew I was there.
I think he did.
Someone
he knows
it off.
He's very witchy. He knows everything.
He kept calling me. And Vince said something, oh, your phone's busy. I go, yeah, it's my wife. I wasn't gonna excuse myself off. And then I went home. I didn't call him right away. I talked to my wife. She's like, what are you going to tell Paul? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to him, and good God, I felt like a piece of crap.
Mm.
But I really believe to this day, I just feel like he wouldn't be able to afford. His heart was in the right place, what I thought. And I, you know, it's a long time ago. But
yeah.
And we obviously are still friends. But there was a time there where it was very...
Well, I think it wasn't too long after that that ECW... They might have only lasted a year
about
or
a
two
year.
More. Like, yeah.
Yeah, on my way to the Garden to wrestle Kurt on my debut, he's the only guy I called. I remember being on Long Island Expressway, and I called him.
Did he answer?
Yeah, he did. Mm. And I said to him, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to debut, and you know that. And I did jobs on the way out, and I know you're mad at me, and I appreciate you taking my call, but I have to thank you. You know, because without you giving the opportunity, I wouldn't be on the way to complete a dream of debuting, of wrestling in my hometown at the Garden.
The Garden, yeah.
You know what I mean? I always had three goals as a wrestler. I just always wanted to just make enough money to make a living, hold a championship somewhere, any kind of championship, and maybe one day work in the Garden. That was always my three goals, you know,
yeah.
And I was able to complete that. And Paul was so supportive and congratulated me. He said, you're going to do great. Just be you and just do your thing in there. And, you know, and funny story, as you and I record this now, as you know, we just did my 500th episode of my show, and I text Paul last night.
Hmm.
And I thanked him because I said to him, without you giving me that opportunity in 1993 to get over this kid called Sabu, because I came in to just put Sabu.
Is that what it was?
That's all it was.
Because you're just like a local guy.
Yeah,
Tasmaniac.
Tasmaniac. And I'm like, bro, can I get some extra dates? He goes, well, I don't know. We'll see, you know. And I worked, and that was it. Boom.
How did that all come to place? And what did Paulie, because Paulie was the king of accentuating strengths and hiding weaknesses.
With everybody.
You look at all those guys from 9-1-1 to Sandman to Public Enemy, and you were obviously much, much, much better than those guys. Yeah. But it was the same thing. Like you said, this 5'8" suplex yeah. killing machine.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
We got out of the Tasmaniac because he felt like I had the gift of gab and I could talk. And I didn't want to talk. I didn't want to cut promos. And he forced me.
Because you're almost like a gimmick. Like you're like a savage
yeah,
or something.
I was like
that,
yeah. The Tasmaniac for me was a mixture of like the Missing Link.
Right.
The Wild Samoans.
Yeah.
And throwing some Steiner Brothers. You know, it's kind of a weird, you know what I mean? Like kind of that kind of weird mix. So, you know, and then we got out of that gimmick and became Taz. That was kind of like Paul's idea. And the orange and black was my idea because I wanted to wear, not that I love orange and black, I just wanted to wear colors that nobody else was wearing. Remember that time, during that time, everybody was wearing red and black.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be different. I remember Bret Hart was wearing pink and black.
Pink and black, yeah.
So to me, that was cool. He had branding. So I understood branding early. And then I broke my neck. I hurt my neck right when I was doing stuff with me and Eddie Guerrero. We're working the loop, tagging against Too Cold and DiMolenko. So, and then I injured my neck bad, and I was out for 9 months.
Mm.
And Paul paid me, and he wasn't making a lot of money with the company, and I just got home from my honeymoon. And I'm like, how are you going to pay me? He goes, I'll pay you. And I felt like I got to be loyal to this guy, and that's why I stayed there for so long. But anyway, the suplex thing and all that, like the whole Taz character, a lot of my inspiration for that came from a mixture of my background as an athlete and training, Pancrase and Mike Tyson.
Mm.
Like that's, and I pulled from all that. And I think you being a creative guy and knowing the business, what I just told you, you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's who Taz was.
Right.
And the towel was from Mike Tyson. Now, Mike Tyson used to wear a white towel around his, like a poncho, cut a hole in it. And he grew up in a part of Brooklyn not far from where I grew up. I didn't know him, but he was hot as hell back then. And I wanted to do something with a towel. And I wasn't going to wear it like him. I didn't want to copy him, so I wore it over my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then during that same time, but I wasn't really paying attention, in Japan, help me, what's his name, was doing the same thing.
Takata?
No. I'm drawing a blank. Suzuki?
Suzuki. Minoru Suzuki?
I think so. Yeah. And I didn't even know because I wasn't even paying attention.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knew I was doing it. I think it was. It really was. I don't think he copied me, and I know I didn't copy him. But anyway, because at first I wore an orange towel, and Paul's like, don't ever wear an orange towel. You wear a black towel. It's sinister. It's mean. And I used to take the towel, dude, and I would make it. I put it in dirt. I roll it in dirt and grime it. I put it in a plastic bag so it smelled. So when I walked in the aisleway, because, you know, there was no people so close, people could smell that.
Hmm.
I wanted that. I wanted that scent. Like, this guy's a bad BMF. You know, this guy stinks. He's nasty. I just wanted that. That's what I used to do with the towel. And then I'd get home. My wife would grab it and wash it. And I'd get hot. Like, don't wash it. You know, it stinks. I know it stinks. It's the gimmick. You're killing the gimmick.
you had, like, when Taz was kind of at his peak, it was a guy, like you said, who never really did jobs and never really bumped in a lot of ways. Like, what a great gimmick to have.
That wasn't my idea, dude.
That was Paulie.
I swear to you.
Of course it is.
The bump, the job thing was not my idea. He, you know, his idea was, I have a way we can get you to do a job. I go, Paul, I'll do a job. Well, we're going to break the ring in Asbury Park with Bam Bam. I go, bro, you don't have to break the ring. You know, but
he's protecting you. That's one of his investments.
He was, but also he was creating a buzz that Taz is hard to do business with.
Oh.
Taz don't want to do a job. Now, looking back, it was smart what he did, because it lent to more legitimacy for the character. That wasn't true. I didn't say that. And that's Paul being a smart booker. I'm not hot at the guy for that. I mean, I might have got hot over the years a little bit over it, but
overall,
it
worked out pretty good.
I was smart.
Tell us about that, because now, you know, we see the ring break. You know, Big Show will suplex Strowman, it breaks. And I think they went through the ring the other day. But that, to me, was the first time we'd ever seen something like that. How was that constructed?
Chris Candido. Chris is the reason why it happened. Because Chris knew a guy named Richie Posner. You know Richie.
Richie Posner, yeah.
Okay? Yeah.
Magic,
you're like,
Richie.
Richie Posner, a lot of people, no one knows
who
that is.
He used to be the prop guy in WWE.
That's
and they call go to Magic.
He was the man, Magic.
You need to go to Magic, Richie Posner.
He was
Posner.
The man, and he worked for WWE for a lot of years. Not anymore. Right? He's not with them.
No, they let him go like 10 years ago or something.
And Chris knew him. Candido knew him. And Chris was working for us, and Paul had the idea of breaking the ring. I didn't know this, and Paul talked to Chris, and then Chris talked to me.
Is that something that happened in the 60s or 70s, or did Paulie just have this epiphany?
I think it might have happened
maybe at some point.
I feel like WWE might have did something like that, like maybe Undertaker early on or something.
Okay.
I don't think we were the first ones to do it.
Okay.
I don't. I think we did it right, because it worked, and no one expected it. And
so he goes to talk to Posner.
And Richie Posner came to the ECW Dojo on Long Island to tell us how he's going to construct this son of a gun. And he came to the show, and he was so nervous. I can't let Vince know. I'll get fired. I'll get in trouble. I'm helping you guys.
Oh, so he did it.
He's on the kayfabe, So anyway, what ends up happening is it worked, obviously. The trapdoor gimmick, but it's still dangerous, because if you hit the edge, me and Bam Bam were concerned. Like, Bam Bam was worried about me, because I had to have him to choke and be higher than him. So when he goes back, if my head hit that framing, you know, you kill yourself, you know?
Did they flip a switch to open it, or how did it work?
You want me to expose the whole gimmick, bro?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
are we just breaking kayfabes here?
Let's not expose it.
Come on, tell me later.
What
happened to the old school Jericho? What are we doing here?
Tell me later.
I'll tell you when you're off the air, kid.
So, but talk about the reaction the fans. They're just like, oh, my God.
It's a trapdoor, Chris.
Well, okay, I know. We've had trapdoors before. I mean,
it's hot. The reaction was insane.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And then when Paul's like, let's do it on the ramp in Dayton, Ohio, I'm like, oh, we can't do it again. No, it's going to be better. And it worked just as good ramp when we did it on a ramp. It was crazy. I mean, it was great. It was Paul. It wasn't me.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
How good was Bam Bam?
The best.
Yeah.
I loved him. Did you ever work with him?
Yeah. I worked with him one time or two times, and I'll tell you in a second. But to me, not just how good was he, how underrated is he?
Oh, people Lord, forget. Man. Oh, yeah. God. He we loved each other, but he would, you know.
Yeah.
You got to be humbled, man. I'm like, well, you know, and I go in and he tater me and I tater him back. And like, you son of a bitch. Bro, we would trade and he was not a fun guy to trade punches with.
Oof.
But he could hurt you badly. And I would test him like, and then he would like bring it. I'm like, all right, we're good, man. We're good. I got it, bro. Yeah.
I worked him. I had this show that New Japan put on a show in America. It was like a WCW and it was.
Mall Americas.
Yeah, it was called. No, it wasn't Mall America. It was called the World Peace Festival in LA. I worked so hard to get on that show because I was a nobody at the time, just working in Japan. I finally weaseled my way on the show, and they put me in there in a three-way with Conan and Bam Bam. Jericho, Conan, and Bam Bam. Ooh. And I'll tell you what, man, he put me over so good. He even did the job for me. For some reason, he was mad at New Japan or something, and he's like, no. Everyone expects Jericho to lose first. He goes, I want to lose, and Jericho's going to pin me. I pinned him with a German suplex.
That's Bam Bam.
And I was like, that's Bam Bam. That's I'd never seen him before, and I saw him one time after. Like, dude, what a guy to do that.
Good guy. Loved him. I loved working with him. He, underrated. You said it best. Mm-hmm. Underrated is the best word, the adjective to use for him.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We talked about this earlier, but I want to bring it up because it's a different show, but my first time in ECW, I came and did a couple matches, but my first match in the ECW arena was against Taz. Mm. And the big thing was that I got to take you off your feet with a German suplex. Yeah. And that, talk about making me Bam Bam, maybe, that made me an ECW in one move.
Yep.
Just the fact that, like, did when Paulie suggested that to you, did you say, who the hell is this guy? Or did he explain anything?
No.
Or was it very easy to figure
out? No. All I said to Paul was, because I knew who you are. Yeah. I didn't know much about you, but I knew I respected the Calgary guys.
Mm.
So I looked at you as a Calgary guy.
Yeah.
Because you come out of a dojo, you know? So I respected guys out of that school,
mm-hmm.
even if I didn't know them. So I just said something along the lines of, Paul, are you you going to do more with Chris? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, do something with this kid,
before I do this, I'm cool with it. I just go, no. We're going to, you know, this guy. Okay, cool, man. It was really that simple of a conversation. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I had a feeling. A lot of us knew you were going to get over, and a lot of folks didn't know you then. But, you know, you're kind of a pretty talented guy. So, you know, I mean, you know, so I had no problem doing it.
But still, talk about the booking of, like, you know, you mentioned how Paulie was able to book certain things. Like, that was a really smart thing. Because I remember that was the only thing. You have to make sure you're going to suplex Taz. I remember talking about, he never leaves his head. You're going to suplex him. Now he's going to pick you up and drop you on your head right afterwards. But that's okay. And by the way, that was the way it was discussed. And that's the way it was told to me. And you did drop me on my head. But that's what we had agreed on.
Did you get hurt?
Not at all.
Uh-huh.
And we agreed upon it, though.
We did. And you had no I
understood
because
I watched ECW in Calgary. A friend of mine had the MSG network. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah.
So I used to go over and say, the guy was a hoarder. He had the worst house, so much shit in there, but I would brave it just to watch ECW.
That's funny. Yeah.
And I knew the legend of Taz and how big of a deal it was, you know?
Yeah. I loved the work. I mean, geez, we worked with each other many times.
A bunch of times.
And in WWE, I remember working with you and, you got me through this match. It was either, I think it was a live Raw. We were maybe like Seg 1.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
And you know, as you know, Seg 1 on Raw is a big deal.
Big deal.
To wrestle. And we wrestled, and it was in Philly.
Wow.
So,
single match?
Yeah, one on one. Someone ran in. I don't remember. Maybe Kurt, somebody, or maybe you were doing something with Backlund.
No, maybe not Kurt Backlund. I never worked with Backlund. Maybe Kurt was with Backlund. Yeah.
Anyway, and what happened was we went over to match, discussed some stuff and all this jazz. And it was getting ready to be showtime. It was maybe like 6:30, 7 p.m. All of a sudden, I get this pain in my shoulder. Like, I can't lift my arm, bro.
Hmm.
And you don't remember this. And I told you, I go, dude, I don't know what's going on with my arm. Now, I had torn my bicep earlier, and I guess it was part of my bicep tendon and my rotator cuff. And it was killing me. You're like, dude, don't worry. We'll get through the match. It's not a big deal. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm just letting you know. I can't. And then I went to see Dr. Romoscavage there. And
Romoscavage.
Crazy man.
Yeah.
And he iced me up. And anyway, and you got me through that match, dude. And
even with your arm was just
my arm was shot.
Dead.
I don't know,
Wow.
You bumped like a champ and your offense was always crisp. So that was a problem. Yeah, no, you got me through that match. More ways than you know.
Yeah.
I was hurting. You motivated me.
Well, that's what we do, though. You know, you take care of your brother.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's funny because I remember this. This is great. There's no way you remember this. So once again, when I first came in ECW, I didn't know anybody. I knew the guys, the characters, but I didn't know the real names or anything
sure.
that. And I always try and just ask someone that, what's your real name? Just so I know, even if somebody's called Triple H, I know his name is Paul.
Right, right.
You know, but I wasn't sure what your name was. And I know that people were talking about you and who your manager was at the time.
Fonzie.
Yes. Yeah. And I went up to you and we were talking about something. I said, what's your real name? Is it Alfonso?
I remember that.
And you're like,
I do remember that.
It's not fucking Alfonso. And I was like, boy, I just got off on the wrong foot with this guy. You remember that?
Oh, I remember that. Oh, my God. That's funny shit.
Oh, so you were so mad at me.
Why did I get so mad?
Fonzie was a little bit of a nutcase, but I just heard like Alfonso Taz. Oh, he's the kind of an Italian-looking guy. Alfonso's an Italian name. That must be his name.
That's totally a true story. And I remember I was like, oh, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I wasn't working with Fonzie. He was a pretty crazy character.
Crazy dude. Passionate guy. Just nuts.
Yeah.
Just nuts. As nuts as everybody thought he was. But he was passionate. He just, every segment we had to do, anything we had to do. All right, Daddy, we're going to, just, you know, he was like coaching Daddy. Me up. I'm like, bro, I got it, dude. You know, he was crazy. So passionate. We had a lot of fun.
But that was the whole concept of the ECW locker room. Like, I remember going there, and Paulie would have the speech in the arena, and there was kind of in my mind's eye, it might be wrong, there was like a flight of stairs or something, and he would stand on the stairs and give the motivational speech
to
everybody.
Rockney.
Yeah. He's like, you know, you are the finest collection of talent.
Nobody wants you. I said at the same time.
They will never give you a chance, but I will.
Totally motivational.
You wanted to run out of there and just go, kill!
And that's how it all was. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was, you know, everybody's like, oh, you drank the Kool-Aid. Yeah, proudly.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
You know, because a lot of what he said was true. I mean, a lot of us were misfits that nobody wanted.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just, until you got hot, then they wanted you.
Yeah. Bubba always had a good point. He said that, like, Vince would tell you how he appreciates you with the amount of zeros on your check. Paulie would literally tell you face to face. And as much as it's great to make money, but like we talked about earlier, getting a compliment from Vince is not an easy thing to do.
Not easy.
Whereas Paulie would always tell you, and it felt good.
Dude, he was the first face I'd see come back to a curve.
Yeah.
And if it was great, he'd be there.
Mm-hmm.
If it was bad, he'd be like, it was good. I think you could have did this here in a promo. You want to talk in a few minutes? We'll take your boots off. Do you think? Yeah. But when it was real good, and he was a fan of my work, so he liked everything I did, he was sitting there and just motivate you and just put you over, and, you know, and I'm like, bro, I just want to take a shower. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, thank you. You know how it is. You just, when you get done working, you're just you're done, you know? He was so passionate. You know?
What do you think the downfall of ECW was? Because you guys worked so hard to get to this position, and then once you got there, it wasn't too long before it was all done.
I think certain acts leaving, like the Dudleys leaving. There were several acts that left, but I think it felt like, and I don't mean this to sound malicious or mean or anything. It's just fact and it's history. I think when the Dudleys left, it hurt because we were getting ready to go national, and I left a little bit after that. And before the Dudleys left, there were several guys that were leaving.
Raven had gone,
and Perry. The Eliminators were done, so that they were getting a big part. Just a lot, you know. Like it was just, you know. But with the Dudleys, I think was the beginning because they were a huge part of the company. You know, the success of the company. Yeah, I mean,
started getting dangerous, and when you get close to the son of, like, you know, the, like Icarus flying too close to the son of the WWE, Vince is going to take some guys.
It's business,
yeah,
you know. And we didn't realize then that I don't know the details, but that Vince was actually helping Paul.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
None of us ever knew that.
I had no idea, you know. So it was none of my business. But I enjoyed working with so many guys there. You know, a lot of those guys from then, and I've talked about this on my show, maybe a lot of your fans and listeners maybe didn't hear this, but I'll say it here. You know, I had a certain texture about me in the locker room in ECW and my rep and who I was and my reputation. And, you know, a hard-ass guy. I took myself very serious, too serious. It took me a long time to get a push like you. But when I got the push, I didn't handle it right. Mm-hmm. I handled it. I remember Raven saying to me once, we were in Tampa, at a house at the fairgrounds working. And he's like, bro, why are you always, you know, you got a beautiful wife and a beautiful home. You're making good money. You're here as an ECW. You're getting pushed to the moon. What are you mad about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know, Scotty. I don't know what I'm at. You know, he wasn't being mean. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just didn't handle. I think I was immature.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I always had a chip on my shoulder because I was told a lot when I came up that I wasn't going to make it.
You're too small or whatever.
Yeah, you just don't have the height. Your work is a little too aggressive and a little, you know, it's a too much. And I was told that. So I'm like a lot of people. When you tell them you can't, you know, I'm going to stick it up your ass. And that's what I pride myself on, you know. And so when I got the big push and I was in ECW, I had walls around me. I was very just immature. I worked hard. I didn't go out and party like a lot of guys do. I didn't begrudge anyone. That's their business. I mind my business. A lot of guys, I guess, didn't look at me as a team guy because maybe I wasn't partying. But there was no peer pressure. But we were all men, you know. But I was very, you know, not human, you know. And to the point that when the infamous incident with Rob and I that everyone heard about in the locker room, and everybody was like, oh,
did
my God.
You guys got a fight or something?
Well, Rob slapped Taz, and Taz didn't fight Rob. That story. You know, I've talked about that on my show. I've had Rob on my show. Mm-hmm. We talked with Rob. We laughed because, like, that was just, it was such a crazy time. And it was, I was going through some stuff personally at home at that time. It was a weird time for me. And we had an issue. What happened was we had a six-man match. Two nights before pay-per-view in New Orleans, it was me, Van Damme, Sabu against the Triple Threat. And the whole match was a cluster. I mean, there was just so many problems because Paul didn't give us the finish until about 10 minutes before the match. Mm-hmm. So we were all scrambling. The match it was the main event, and it just didn't work well. So there was a lot of arguing in a private room with six of us and Paul. And a lot of stuff was said, and then we walked out of the room, and everything was fine. And then we had a house show on Long Island, not far from my house. And then, you know, Rob, Sabu, and Fonzie traveled together. And Sabu, I was behind a table, putting my boots on, sitting down, you know, locker room, getting ready for the show. And Sabu, hey, what's up, bro? Hey, what's up? You know, the routine when guys in the locker room. Hey, Fonzie, what's up? And then Rob, he said, pick a hand. I go, what? And he gives me a swat, catches me like on the corner of my jaw. Like, I didn't know if he was joking. I didn't know. Like, it wasn't like it knocked me down.
Right.
Like, what? You know, and I got up. Like, what, bro, what the f***? Like, what? You know, and then it's like, I didn't go at him because I didn't know
what
was going on. And I was like, I don't want to sound soft, but I was in like a whole different, I was dealing with some stuff.
Well, yeah.
And then Rob and I, and then there's a pull apart for the most part. And then Rob and I, you know, talked and worked it out and remained. He did a big dive that night, and I caught him.
Like, yeah, just, you know, one of those things that happens. Like, what are you going to do? If you guys are good friends and you get smacked, you're going to punch him out?
No, like, yeah, that's not how it works. No, thank
you. You're more like, surprised and almost hurt.
Right, and I said to Rob, you killed the legend of Taz. Like, we laughed. Like, I joked. I text him. I go, you killed Taz, you know, and like, he laughs. Look, so we joke about it, you know, like, but I still have fans that'll try and come at me on Twitter like trolls, you know, with stuff. And I laugh. I'm like, dude, you guys... My producer's sitting in here right now. Like, he's heard Rob on the show. We laughed. Like, we talked. Like,
yeah. You know? I mean, but that's stuff that happens in the heat of the moment and all that sort of thing.
I know.
Thing, you know?
Dude, how many times has that happened? It's happened a lot in the business, too, right? People don't hear some stuff that happens with the boys.
I know it.
You know? And absolutely. It's so, you know what? It's like, I don't. But you know what? This is my point and the whole crux of why I'm bringing this up. In a way, it was great for me because it broke down this wall. And now, of course, a lot of people are doubting my toughness and my integrity and my heart, and that's fine. You can doubt me all you want. Try me, and what do we got to do? But I kind of was okay with it because it made me open up my eyes, how people thought of me. Like, I was just like shocked that people thought, why didn't he try and kill Rob? Oh, my God, it was shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now there's boys in the locker room, so, of course, they're all going to chirp and say what they're going to say because they have something to talk about. You know,
yeah,
we're talking about something that was over 20 years ago.
But I'll tell you something, just as the final thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than if you're sitting in a bar and somebody comes and slaps you.
Different story. Yeah.
If you slap me right now, rather than wanting to kill, I'd be like, what's going on, dude? Why would you do that? What's going on? What's the problem? That's what friends are.
Right.
And once again, all the guys in the locker room, it's our team. And you don't like everybody, but we're still respect.
Yeah.
You know, we're out there making money for each other and going through all this together. So that's not even an issue at all in my mind. I would do the same thing.
Yeah, man. You know? And like Rob and I talked about it. That was it. I mean,
yeah,
like,
and it's over.
And it was because he thought I was saying all this bad stuff about him behind his back. And it was wrestler telephone. And I'm like, Rob, I think there's some bad info. It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. But
and look, it was good because it made me more human.
Yeah.
To my peers.
Sure. Which is good.
Yeah, I was happy with that. I'm fine with it.
Last two questions. First of all, who's your favorite guest you've ever had on your radio show? And what's your favorite match that you've ever had?
My favorite guest I've ever had on my radio show is Chris Jericho.
Smart guy.
No, well, because I owed you an apology because I was waiting for the unblock apology from Jericho. And, I made the list and I was wrong.
Go listen to Taz episode 500. Yeah, you'll hear about that. Yeah.
No, I don't even look at you as a guest. I look at you as a friend. But who is my favorite guest? Best guest? Favorite guest? Oh, geez. I got to tell you, had a lot of fun. This is going to surprise a lot of people. I've had a lot of great guests. So that's a tough question. It is. Dude. If I ask you that, how do you had more guests
one,
than me.
One name will pop in. Or
the one guy that jumped out, I had a lot of fun. It's going to shock you. I don't know if you know him or not. Jeremy Borash.
Oh, wow.
Like Jeremy, Seth, remember that, right? Jeremy sat here, and he had a history in radio. So, and I know him a long time.
He's got a great sense of humor, too.
Oh, my God, yeah. So we had a lot of fun. Matt Hardy also, because Matt was in the gimmick.
The broken gimmick the whole while. I had him on my show in the gimmick.
Yeah, he did the gimmick, So now, it's like, so Matt was a lot of fun. But I've had a lot of guys on. Just like you've had more than me, I said, but a lot of great guests. I mean, but Jeremy jumps out to me because I didn't expect Jeremy to be that great, and he was happened to be in New York, so he came by, and he was great. He was a great. If you haven't had him on your show, you should have him on. Yeah. You'll have a great time. He's a good dude, man.
What's your favorite match you've ever had?
Anything Sabu? I mean, I love working Sabu.
Nice.
One of my favorite matches was him and I living dangerously. I don't remember the year. I'm bad with this. I want to say 98 in Asbury Park, New Jersey. For the FTW title. The only credible title in the industry's history, ladies and gentlemen. It's like the $1 million title.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, him and I just, we were combative with each other behind the scenes too, but I love him. I love him. I don't care if some days he loves me, some days he hates me. Yeah. I love him.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be no Taz without him.
Right.
There'd be no me. I mean, there'd be no Taz character. He made me. You know, and I loved working with him. So it's, we had a plethora of 30-minute Broadways all over the place, like, during that time, and they were all fun. Yeah. But that match, that pay-per-view match, Living Dangerously for the FTW title, I had a blast.
That's the one,
I think so. I don't think he was too happy. He liked the match, but, sometimes.
Did he lose?
I love him. Let's leave it at that.
Dude, great talking to you, man. Thank you so much. Congratulations and everything.
Thank you. Congrats to you. And get old already. I hate you.
So thanks, Alfonso.
Heel!
All right, thanks to Taz. Check out the Taz Show every weekday. It's a video show and a podcast. Just find him on Facebook at The Taz Show. He's got over 500 episodes up on there. He's got some great guests. Taz covers wrestling at times, so you'll hear his insight on what's happening with today's product. He covers sports. He covers news of the world. He's got a great cast of characters with him as well. So check out the video or download the podcast, The Taz Show. Go do it now. And also, go book your cruise on Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, setting sail October 27th. Still a lot of great cabins left at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, but don't kid yourself. We are on a sellout pace. We are going to sell this bad boy out, especially after the big announcement this week. Kenny Omega will be joining the cruise. He'll be wrestling on the ship as part of the Ring of Honor, and also there will also be the Sea of Honor tournament. We'll tell you more about that, but Kenny Omega, the one of the biggest stars in independent wrestling today, probably the biggest star that's not in WWE, is joining the Jericho Cruise, hot on the heels of our great match, Alpha vs. Omega. So make sure you go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin for as low as $150 deposit. And once you book, remember, everything is included in the booking price. Everything, all the food, all the activities, it's all inclusive. Live podcasts, free. Stand-up comedy shows, free. Meet and greets, free. Concerts, free. Pictures, signings, the chance to see Kenny Omega wrestle, it's all covered in the price of your cabin. Only thing you pay for is if you have the vices of drinking and gambling, you pay for that. The rest is for free. And you get to hang out on the ship with all these incredible luminaries and guests. Remember, we're not sequestered here. It's one big giant cruise ship. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to hide. You will be hanging out with Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, Cyrus and Paul Lazenby from Killing the Town. We'll be doing a live podcast versus the Keeping It 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms. Beyond the Darkness, we'll be telling some scary tales with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing their hilarious unprofessional wrestling show. Speaking of hilarious, Brad Williams, hilarious. Ron Funch is hilarious. Jim Brewer, hilarious. Three of the greatest stand-up comics in America today. Jim's also going to be rocking you with his great band, The Loud and Rowdy, featuring Steve Brown and PJ Farley from Trickster. Busted Open Radio is joining the festivities. Dave LaGreca will be there. Will Bully Ray? We'll have to wait and see. Fozzie will be playing three sets. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, their new record, Age of Absurdity, is out now. Check it out. King will be there. The Stir from Atlanta. The Dave Spivak Project. Go watch his new video for Get Out of My House on YouTube right now. Speewee will be on board playing. The Cherry Bombs, the darlings of rock and roll. If you see a hotter rock and roll show this year, let me know. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best male Ozzy cover band. And, of course, the Pièce de Resistance, Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. The entire Bullet Club will be there. Kenny Omega, like we said, the Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, Adam Page, the Hangman, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, will be there. World champion, ROH World Champion Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Delirious is going to be there. Cody's wife Brandy is going to be there. We got so many stars, and there's still more to be announced. I got a few good ones left. They're going to blow your mind. This is the place to be. October 27th to the 31st, leaving Miami to the Bahamas. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin now. All right. Speaking of booking big names, and speaking of booking your cabin, and speaking of everything else that I do, wow. He's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but he should be. Ever heard the song Taking Care of Business? You ever heard the song American Woman? Ever heard the song You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, Let It Ride? We're talking about Randy Bachman. Winnipeg's own Randy Bachman is going to be here talking all about BTO, the Guess Who, opening for Van Halen, the Beatles, and everything in between. This is a rock and roll history lesson with Randy Bachman, Taking Care of Business with Randy Bachman next week right here on Talk is Jericho. Until then, in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll see you next Wednesday.